And welcome back to another fabulous episode of Extra Feature. Today I have a wonderful film you all need to see called Wooden Hearts. Writer, director, honor, even after your last name.
Oh, Honor Tuchel. Yeah, Honor Tuchel.
There you go. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here, Simon. Thank you.
Now, go ahead.
Simon, right? Simon, yes. Good to be here. Yeah.
I got to tell you guys, I hope you're watching this on video or if you're listening to the podcast, this guy's got the best beard I've seen in ages. His beard is awesome.
I think I'm going to try to do Santa Claus in December. I think you can make a little money being a Santa. So.
Yes, you probably could. I can't, but you can, which is
Well,
great.
I've got this look because I'm trying to get back into acting, and I want to see how far I can get, if I can get anywhere with this look because it's so specific. Oh, and I want to see if it's going to get me anywhere. If not, I'll probably trim it, cut it off, and then grow it back out in December because I might have a project where Santa Claus is involved. So
let's start at the beginning. I mean, I've seen the movie. I mean, it obviously has a little bit of an ending. I want to discuss the origins of the film. Now, is this a real prophecy or stuff, or just something you made up?
What do you mean by prophecy?
Well, I felt like, okay, you want me, they always, I'm going to state at one point, somebody goes missing, and they always say they're going to come back. And that's really, I thought, the basis of the film.
Wooden Hearts about the puppeteer, right?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean? Who goes missing?
The king goes missing.
Oh yeah. Right. The king goes missing and comes back. So is it a prophecy about like modern times and where
yes,
we are?
Yes, or something. I don't know.
I don't think so. I just think we made this movie because Vit Jorge, who's the puppeteer, he had an actual tour where he was going across the country doing puppet shows. And me and CJ Gardella tagged along to help on the show. And we took my red Komodo camera and a couple of wireless road mics. And we said, let's make a movie on the road. And as we were on the road shooting, we were just coming up with a lot of ideas. And one of the ideas was there was a king and his maiden that were always together and that get separated. And it just was one of those ideas that sounded like fun. You know, this idea of being separated and then coming back together. But we weren't trying to make any kind of, you know, sage or, you know, interesting, you know, political comments or anything like that.
Oh, I didn't know. I had to ask.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I like that you're looking into it and seeing something more intelligent than it is. It's fun. A lot of people talk about how when the king and maiden are separated, it is a big moment in the film and their hearts break and they're comforted by two things. Later on the film, when my character confesses that he sold the king, they're comforted by the fact that the puppeteer, the nameless puppeteer, he just shrugs and says, it's okay. They'll always find each other.
Yes,
and I think that's a comment on the beauty of fate and the idea of like acceptance, accepting what happens is what happens. And I think the puppeteer is a very wise man. I don't think we see a lot of that in the movie, but I think it's implied that he's a very wise, patient, a decent man, you know, so.
So I want to back this up. So you went out and helped the puppeteer. This is what I'm wondering, in real life, obviously. How did you know this guy? Let's start there. How did you get to know him? How did you go on tour?
In 2020, the summer of 2020, when COVID was happening, I made a movie called Scenes from an Empty Church. In a beautiful church on 9th Avenue and 33rd Street in New York called St. Michael's Catholic Church. My friend Andrew Shemin's a very, very devout Catholic, and he had access to the church. We made a movie there, and the movie's about these sequestered priests who are trying to find meaning during COVID. And one of the things they want to do is they want to watch. They can't go to Broadway. They can't see shows, but they want to still have, you know, revisit. They want to know what it's like to feel like to watch a live performance. So they bring in a puppeteer to hold a show, to put on a show for them. And I was looking around New York for a puppeteer, and I found several people, and then I stumbled upon Vit Jorge, who ended up being our puppeteer in the movie. And he just weaved a spell. He's just, you know, something about those puppets that are so beautiful, and they're 200 years old and hand-carved from the Czech Republic. Something about all of it I just found mystical and magical and ethereal And he was really wonderful. And he's one of these Lower East Side artists in New York who's been around for 40 years. And I just connected with him right away. And then so we kept talking years later about making something together. And this just kind of opened up and the opportunity opened up and we all said yes to it. So not quite knowing what we were in for, you know. So, yeah, that's how it started.
So these puppet shows that you have all the people at are real puppet shows.
Yeah, they're real puppet shows in the Midwest. We went to Indiana. We went to little cities, Czech communities, a lot of Czech communities where there are a lot of immigrants who immigrated there across the Midwest. Yeah, it was probably a 12-day trip, and Veet put on maybe eight shows, nine shows, maybe more. He put on some shows were 2 days, two shows a day. So very grueling for anybody, but especially a 70-year-old man. And then, I'm in my 50s, CJ's in his 40s. So it was good exercise. You know what I mean? Having my first cup of coffee for the day, a
It's
very
all good.
weak coffee, because I don't want too much caffeine.
So,
So.
how did you decide about filming? And obviously, filming a puppet show to me, I want to say your film does not look like a film. It looks almost like a documentary.
Yeah, I mean, we were
If
trying to. Yeah.
that we were going for more of a documentary look.
In terms of the shows themselves, yeah, we
Yes.
wanted that to feel verite. We wanted it to feel very real. He has a process of setting up the show, breaking down the show, and we all showed that the way he really set up the show and broke down the show. So that stuff was very, very documentary. And then as we were shooting, we were stumbling upon lots of locals in the different cities we went to. And then, based on their energy or their interest, we would ask them if they'd want to be in the show. So, most of the people that are in the movie that are, just day players or whatever, they're just people that are around the community, So, in a way, we weren't really documenting who they were, but they were playing themselves and there was a lot of improvisation. So, yeah, we were proud of that fact that we were just kind of. Just trying to take it all in, be in the moment, meet all these great people. And, we're like, hey, we're making a movie. We're making a little movie. Do you want to be in it? And most people said yes, So.
How did you decide your character? I mean, obviously you're directing, you're writing, you're doing it all. Literally, it sounds like you
Well,
even had to find
everybody's
everybody.
doing it all, yeah, Simon. Everybody's doing it all. CJ's basically running the camera. We're trying to figure out lights. We don't have any lights, so we're using available lighting. He's camera operating. He's gaffing. He's doing everything. Veet is, he's driving the van. He's putting on the shows, and he's acting. He's learning dialogue. And I'm just in a way, it's a lot kind of easier when you just have a two-person crew because you know what I mean. Like you could just run and gun and point the camera and go. You don't have to sit around. For me, on a film set, waiting for lights and waiting for the setup and going through blocking, all that stuff is agonizing to me. But when the cameras are running and we're shooting, I think it's always a lot of fun. To me, that's where I really, really wake up. But okay, what was the question again specifically?
You answered it. It's fine. You're
Oh, okay.
perfect.
Yeah,
You're
yeah. So, I
perfect.
mean, it's just fun. I feel like instead of making a film, we had a script and we were discovering the script as we were going and writing scenes as we were going because it was all really just about being inspired by what was presenting itself. It wasn't like making a film. It was like painting a picture or sculpting a sculpture from clay, We're just kind of finding it and making mistakes and a lot of stuff that we shot we didn't use and a lot of stuff that we shot that we did use would inform what we would shoot later when we weren't on the road. Because there's another narrative component. There's the guy on the road, the puppeteer who's living his best life. He's engaging in art. He's having sex with Pete. He's having fun. He's engaged. You know what I mean? That's what he's engaging in life, the beauty of life. He's dancing. He's enjoying himself. And then he juxtaposed with his son who is back home, basically just neurotic in his head. Just, anxious and just not able to, enjoy the life that he's been given. And we like that juxtaposition between a 70-year-old man living his best life and a middle-aged boy, man, a man, also a man who is not having a good time. And it's not his fault necessarily, sadness, melancholy, dread, it's part of it. Even more so now with the world, with anxiety and mental disorders going up. But we just thought that would be a nice juxtaposition. And a lot of the storyline, we discovered on the road, knowing that there was a son back home who was sad, So, yeah.
So, how to play failing your character? I mean, you're not the nicest person in the movie. You make a lot of choices I probably personally could make, but at the time, your character thought they were working for him. Was that
Yeah.
enjoyable?
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like in a way like that, my character is kind of a trope that we've seen before. It's the hitchhiker he's been picked up off the road and who's a little bit more of a prankster and he's a, agent of chaos. I'm always trying to reconcile with mistakes I've made in my past, you know what I mean? So I feel like doing that character was kind of embracing some of those ideas, regrets, and trying to change and be a better person. And my mother had died in 2021. We made this in 2023 or 2020. Yeah, we shot it in 2023. And I feel like I was trying to channel some of the sadness of my mother's death without being too deep about it. You know what I mean? Like, the movie's not deep. It's 80 minutes. I think it's got some deep ideas and some beautiful ideas. But in that sense, the hitchhiker who's alone and looking for a tribe, looking for a family, I think that might represent how lost I felt maybe after my mom died, So,
Interesting. Wow,
yeah.
that's deep. I did not. I just felt I love the puppeteer. This guy is like fine. Like
Yeah.
he just seems to doesn't nothing bugs him. He just seems to be having a good time the whole movie. I'm kind of like the things that are happening to you, buddy. I would not be that happy. And just like, oh well, just keep going.
Yeah, for sure. Wait, the things you wouldn't be happy about what? Which part?
Just okay. My favorite scene is the scene that the puppeteer tells you. Don't touch the trucks.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to happen. And I love that scene. It
Yeah,
just made me
that
laugh.
I'm so glad you liked that. I think there's some funny moments in the movie. I write dark comedies, and my scripts are very, very planned out, very specific. Every syllable is kind of written out. Although, I allow for improv and I allow actors to change the dialogue. But we was way looser on this. So, we would do a scene like that where I'm supposed to be in a room, getting drunk, being sad about my mother, being sad about being alone, having the company of these puppets. That was fun, we're there doing it, we're improving a lot of it. And for me, so many mistakes that I've made when I was drunk, drinking too much. People that I've offended or people that I've pissed off, or in this case, he pisses off the puppeteer, he breaks the rules. A lot of rules that I've broken. There's this kind of arrogance or privilege that comes with being drunk, and you think you can get away with anything when you can't. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think it's funny though. I think that scene's funny, and it does show how lost he is, And also good, this nice contrast between the puppeteer who's got his nice Zen life on the road, having it upended by this kind of obnoxious, jerk who's with him. I like that kind of conflict, and I like where it goes because the third act, of course, we put the puppeteer in danger, take away all the things he loves, and then he has to find his way in the world, without a mechanized form of transportation, his van, with the van itself has a lot of personality too, so.
Now, where did the phone idea came from? Which I friggin' love the phone.
Yeah, so
I want to know first off, where you found that phone, and how does it work in this movie? Because it seems to work everywhere.
I love, man, Simon, I'm glad you picked up on these details. I like the phone too. I wish we could have had a little bit more fun with the props. Veet Jorge and his company, they have this great studio in Dumbo, New York, where they have 200 puppets, all just, we actually shot in the studio. You see all the puppets kind of hanging on in a big row in a long procession. And so there were a lot of props there too. And one of the props we found was a red phone that just looked so iconic and interesting. And we thought, we want this movie to have a little magical realism. So it just made sense that he'd be communicating with some shadow organization or shadow person.
Oh, I totally was hoping that would go. I go, there's another story behind it. I
Oh my
gotta
God, I
know.
know. I wish we had had more time or money, to flesh something out. I mean, we had no money and we had all the time in the world because when you have no money and everybody's willing to just participate, you can just keep shooting as long as you want. We wanted to finish and get it done because no one is getting paid. But yeah, it was just a kind of a, we just wanted to bring a little bit more mystery into it, What drives art? I'm kind of fascinated with the idea of where art comes from. Of course, it's an amalgamation of all the extrapolation of all the movies we've watched, all the conversations we've had, all the experiences we've had. Art comes from that, comes from within, but I also think it kind of comes from another place, a mysterious place, other world, the collective unconscious, as they call it. So I don't know if it might be a kind of touching on that idea,
I thought it was great. I know the film doesn't go here, but I really think if you stop the film halfway and ask the phone question, you would get the best answers.
Yeah.
I'm convinced he was a dark agent for something, and it was Satan calling him. You see the stuff
Yeah.
I was thinking of the whole time. Because to me, the puppets become the film at one point.
Yeah.
They really do become real. And I think you try to focus on that throughout the film. I mean, the puppeteer is very real for me. You're very real, but the puppets become part of the film for me by the end.
I'm glad you said that. We were trying, when you just have a puppet hanging and it's gently, swaying in the wind, like with the cemetery scene, and then you just do a little slight push in on the camera to those faces that look so real, they really do take on human qualities. They just look so, and sitting them in a position watching TV. One of my favorite scenes is when they're watching the Marx Brothers, and it's a very quiet scene. My movies are not quiet. It's usually people talking and talking until you want them to shut up. And in this case, I have a lot of silence in this movie, and just being in a hotel room, a city motel room, and having Veet sitting there watching with a group of puppets watching TV, I think it's just magical and wonderful. And to me, I could have watched that scene forever because they puppets do feel alive. And we wanted to convey the sense of being alive without showing them, move. We didn't really have the budget for that either. But a lot of times the puppets are just sitting there, and you really do feel like there's a soul within them, and there's a sadness to them too. And this idea of the origin, where do we come from? What do we have souls? Are you alive? Is there someone else pulling the strings? Existentialism, all that stuff was weaved into it pretty organically. Like, we didn't have to do too much work just to, again, bring the puppets to life and to present philosophical ideas without delving too deeply. I have a problem in some of my movies where my characters have to explain everything and they talk everything to death. And with this movie, I think I got to present a lot of ideas without having to do that. The fact that we have puppets there and somebody, taking care of the puppets, traveling with the puppets, who's very protective of the puppets, the metaphors, you can come up with a ton of metaphors for what that is, So.
Now, did you have to give any direction?
You're snickering. Is that pretentious? Do I just sound like a pretentious asshole?
No,
If
I
I just
love it. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I'm not snickering. It's funny because I find the film very deep. Maybe other people
Oh,
won't.
thank you. Yeah, Simon,
I just think there's stuff in here.
we've had some screenings. We haven't had much festival support at all, and I think it's the perfect festival movie. But the screenings we've had, people really, really do like it and really do enjoy it. And I think there is, and it's a short movie. It's 80 minutes, so it's easy to get through. And I do think it, and again, it's really simple, but I think it has a lot to say about life, about family, about art, about the pursuit of art. Why make art? I just think it has a lot of things to say. Avoiding responsibility as well as a parent. Veet does have a responsibility to a child, but even though the child's an adult, he has to find his own way. He can't. He's too depressed. I just think those are all lovely kind of themes, So.
Okay, you're saying the two-man crew. There is a scene when a man purchases one of the dolls, which we told off the beginning. Is that the other guy, the gaffer and
Oh,
the
no, there
cameraman?
was no gaffer. So CJ did it. CJ, the DP, the guy who purchases the dolls. Now, we shot that part in upstate New York, or upstate, or somewhere in Jersey, a rural place in Jersey. And that's Max Casella. Max Casella is a dear friend of mine. He's been in a ton of movies. He's been on The
Hey,
Sopranos,
is that the
Boardwalk.
guy from Dookie Howser?
Yes, he was in Doogie Howser. That was his
Yeah,
kind
I
of
met
cameo
him.
thing.
I saw him in Lion King when I was in New York.
He has a really interesting career trajectory, because he was a child actor who, and then he had a health issue with his pituitary gland. Then he got that sorted out, and it aged him quite a bit. So he did Doogie Howser, I think, when he was an adult. I think he was 19 or 20. He was much older
Oh,
than his
okay.
character, but he looked a lot younger. But then he eventually did Broadway, came back to doing film and television, and he's an extraordinary actor. He's a brilliant actor. He's also a very, very talented artist as well, painter and illustrator. Yeah, I love Max. So he was upstate. We went to my friend Aunt, the blonde girl and the couple that are in the movie.
Yes.
That was their place. And Max and Annie are friends, so we were all up there for the weekend, and we shot some stuff there. So I like that. There's some perverted kind of aspects to the puppeteer as well. You know what I mean? The fact that he wakes up in this person's house, he doesn't know where he is, and then he sneaks a peek at them having sex. We wanted. We, I don't know. We just wanted. We felt like that was a fun way to go because it was a little unexpected. And it's also, again, one of the beauties of life is not spying on people, obviously, but engaging in sex, having fun, being in the moment. So the sex stuff was, everybody was on board for that, even though it's not explicit or anything, obviously. So
Oh no, I think it's fun. I
yeah.
really think it adds a good chunk of comedy to it. And I think it gives the puppeteer much more depth that we don't get without it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it shows he wants, he's just not a madman who wants his toys and his puppets, which I accuse him of, but he is a person who travels around looking for true human connection, you know? And I think doing those shows and doing any art is bringing community together. So everyone's sharing in a, you know, in a show together. And it's so important now in a, in an age where everyone's more isolated with social media. And it feels like AI just wants to push us further in, inside our heads as opposed to being around people and being connected to people. It's kind of a reminder for me too. When we took the, when we decided to do the movie, it was like road tripping. I think there, I mean, being in nature and hiking is restorative, but I think road tripping is restorative. Being in new places is restorative. Connecting with new strangers is restorative and amazing, you know? So yeah, all those things. It was kind of saying yes to the universe and saying yes. The movie is about saying yes, and you know, and not, you know, just staying at home being you know, I don't want to judge anyone. I get depressed. I stay home. I can't leave my bed for hours, days sometimes, you know. So this is also a movie about myself and about my own depression and about a reminder that, you know, carpe diem, seize the day, you know. And as an artist, as a filmmaker, it's there's always this, as I get older and it's harder to do this, it's kind of like a memo to myself saying, art, create art. That's why that's the life you've chosen, you know. So yeah, Simon, it's really nice and sweet that you watch the movie and you have all these questions about it, you know, and comments.
I do. So, how you don't have a lot of gear then, it sounds like. I mean, everything has
No,
to fit in the van.
one red. Yeah, we had a bunch of puppets in this van, which has a lot of character. We had a red Komodo and literally like four of these Rode wireless microphones that are the size of like a cigarette lighter. And you know, they're so small and they're so light. And they really record good audio. And then my sound mixer, Michael Suarez, he's a genius. He's brilliant. He does the sound mix. We had a little bit of money for a sound mix, so he mixes the sound, makes it sound great. So, you know, I don't necessarily, I don't know if I'd ever make a movie like this again. I might make a movie like this somewhere, maybe in Turkey or something, but maybe with a 6 or 7 person crew. You know, the dollar goes a lot further in Turkey. So if I would raise $10,000, it would be worth a little bit more in Turkey. I really want to make a movie in Turkey, but and I think puppet culture is pretty big in Turkey. I think I used a pen name for the script for this movie. I think I used Kukla Tomas. Tomas was my mother's maiden name, and then Kukla means puppet in Turkish, or it might
Oh.
mean marionette. Yeah, so
So is that why you have very strange music all the time? Like you just hear it in the
the music in
background.
the
Oh,
in the
very different.
yeah well Michael Montez is my composer in this movie, and he talk about another genius and brilliant. He's always been by my side supporting me doing these movies basically for free. Definitely did this one for free. We didn't give him any money. And he's an artist. Like I feel like Michael, in a way, Michael Montez, who scored a ton of things, he's kind of a template for this movie. Like he is an artist who's committed to art, who believes in art, who thinks about art very in a very, very serious way, but also not pretentious, in a profound way, really thinks about where why he's making it, what it is. And he wanted to make kind of this, I don't know, like a triumphant kind of score about a man who is on the road. He wanted to just to be, I don't know, a celebration of being on the road while still having moments of melancholy and moments of dissonance. Yeah, I love Michael, and he has a son as well who's going into the arts. So Michael's one of these guys who's been able to make art his whole life and still be a father and be a caring, great father who is invested in what his son's future. And yeah, the music's terrific. I love the music, you know. And I contributed a little bit. I would do some guitar score and some little piano, weird little piano kind of experiments. And then if Michael responded to those, he would take them and augment them, add more orchestration, and it would be part of the score, you know. Because I think the idea was that the puppeteer had his own score, and the kind of wayward, lost hitchhiker had his own score, and then he had something in the puppeteer's score was triumphant, the man on the road, the artist, the powerful artist, the wizard in a way. And I was lost, you know, so my there's this kind of wandering piano that's kind of not, it's wavering and it doesn't really have a place, undulating. And then you have the melancholy puppet son who has its own score too, which is very sad, but in a very unique way. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I really love the score. I love Michael Montez and his work. I'm just so grateful that he's always sticking with me and that he likes my work enough that he'll create art for it, so.
So the road scenes, and then there's parts where you're hitchhiking and stuff. Now, are they all by that cabin? Because I would say they are. They look like they're very similar to
Yeah,
that.
some of them are by the end of the movie. Yeah, there is a sense of like everything is taking place in the wooded area there. But we're on the road traveling, and you have those those horizons and those flatlands. We're in the Midwest. We're doing that stuff. But by the end of the movie, when we get to the final home of the puppeteer, a lot of those exteriors are around that area. Just for it was easy proximity. We're in that area. So I wish we'd have gotten more road shots, but I think the road shots we got, there's a really wonderful shot where the van is coming from the horizon, coming from the distance, and it goes into the foreground, and it's leaving this kind of wake of dust in the back, and it feels just like a billowy cloud of, I don't know, it's very magical to me,
And then I think you cut to the phone ringing again.
Yeah, probably.
And
Yeah,
I
there.
think we go there, and then you cut, and then the phone rings. And I keep
Yeah,
thinking, what is going on?
the phone was wonderful. It's just a fun. We'd be sitting there thinking, phone call? Should you be getting a phone call right now? You'd stumble across things like there's a phone booth that looks like it's plucked right from the 60s or 70s. And when we saw that phone booth, it's like, oh, he has to take a call from there. And so he takes the call. We don't quite know what she's saying to him on the other end. We would write that later, but we knew there would be a lot of phone calls with instructions. And so I like the last phone call he gets because it's from the shadow organization who's basically tearing into him for being an absentee father. And it's to me, it's really funny. Veet and I butted heads a lot on the road because he's got a big personality. We worked it out. We all, we would argue, but then it was like my parents, like argue with my parents and then everything would be okay 30 seconds later or 2 minutes later. And he did not like at all the amount of profanity that's in the movie because there's some profanity in the
Oh
movie, and
yeah, not enough to bug me.
it didn't bother. It doesn't bother me. I like profanity as a way to express myself. I've always used it, but I know that some people, and they're right, they consider it lazy. It's a lazy form of communicating. It's pedestrian. It's trashy, but we would argue about that. Just for the record, Veet did not endorse the profanity. He was okay with the sex, though. He was totally fine with the sex.
Okay, let's go back to the fact. I think it works though. And I think your character and his character are, he's being nice to you and he's pissed off that you're like his kid. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? I do think he sees the same thing. He wants to talk to you like he wants to talk to his son, which he
Yeah.
refuses to do. And I do feel that connection. And I think that's exactly how the conversation would happen. You guys
For
aren't going to be
sure.
friends.
Yeah, no, for sure. I didn't think about the idea of me being a surrogate son, but I'm almost like the son that it's so funny 'cause like compared to his other son, he's quiet, more reserved. Yeah, I'm a loudmouth, just, obnoxious guy, so but I do rankle him. I do. He does end up breaking and snapping and yelling at me, like a father would yell at his son. So yeah, there is that idea that, I mean, my mother has died, so I'm looking for a family. So it would make sense that he's got his father, a surrogate father there, to be there for him. So yeah.
Okay, your favorite film.
My favorite film, oh my God, it all changes, in a lot of ways. But the movie that has had the most profound effect on me at the earliest age was Jaws. I saw Jaws when I was 5 years old in a movie theater and then was obsessed with it. And then we got HBO. This was in probably 78, 79, late in the late 70s, early 80s. I remember the day we got cable connected in our house and everything went from a. I didn't even know it was possible. Everything went from a staticky, kind of really grainy image to a clear, pristine image, just like that. It was like magic. I was freaked out. And the cable guy had an HBO guide. I don't know if you ever had an HBO guide. There were these little 30 page little
We had
pamphlets
something similar in
that would have
Canada.
that. You're in Canada, right?
I'm Canadian, yeah. We had
Yeah.
something
So
similar.
I'm yeah. So and then. Eight, on the cover of this pamphlet, I don't know if the cable guy just strategically put it down on near us so I could see it because I saw Jaws on the cover of the pamphlet. It was the iconic poster of the shark swimming up to the woman. And I freaked out and I was like, Mom, HBO, we can watch Jaws on the TV. And somehow we got HBO and I watched Jaws. It felt like every time it was on, I watched it. I've watched it hundreds of times. I've got other movies, the top 10, the top 20, the top five that maybe changes, but Jaws will never not be a top five and probably is number one. I just think it's a beautiful, perfect movie. And I love how the first half and the second half are two different movies. You've got the horror film, the shark on the shark terrifying everybody. The whole community is up in arms. We don't even see the shark. It's brilliant. And then the second half is kind of like a chamber piece where these three characters, disparate characters, are on the boat trying to kill the shark. And it's just lovely. And it's such great dialogue and it's such great acting and Spielberg's direction. But not by design, but by the fact that they had no choice because they were shooting so long, he could be very, very well, he was very, he's always very specific storyboarding and he knew what he wanted. But because it was taking so long, they could really be really, really thoughtful about their shot choices. The editor could be really thoughtful about the editing that she was doing. And I just think it's a kind of a perfect movie, and especially now with AI and CGI, that shark, that big rubber, amazing shark, still has something that you just can't get today. I mean, I saw the new Rennie Harlan movie about the plane that crashes and the sharks killing everybody in the
Yes.
water. And it's just, I mean, I thought the first 20 minutes were really interesting, but then it's just all the CGI. It's not even good CGI. Yeah, Jaws. Jaws, one of my favorite. What's one of your top five? Or
Okay. Mine would be Vertigo would be on my list. I
that
just
is
there's
that
again
number
the
one.
two probably Vertigo, yeah.
Oh man, I haven't seen enough Hitchcock at all. I'm an
Oh, I've
idiot. I
seen
need.
everything Hitchcock exists, I've seen.
Are you make films as well? Do you make movies?
I do not, but we can discuss this all after. This is your interview,
Oh
not
sure.
mine. Okay. You live in New York, correct? From
Yeah, I
what I
live in New York.
understand.
I've been here. It'll be Halloween. It'll be 16 years. I
What
go
is
back
your
and forth from North Carolina and New York. But
what's your
I
favorite
live here most of the year.
what's your favorite thing to do in New York?
Oh my God. We just being around, well, making movies here is easily my favorite thing. I've been lucky. I've been able to make 10 movies here. Although we didn't, Wooden Hearts was technically not made in the city, it was made outside the city. But I get down in New York. I get depressed in New York. Sometimes I feel like I'm ignored, whatever. Everybody's doing great things but me. But then when I get a movie off the ground and I make a movie, everything just writes itself and everything is in stasis. And I just feel everything, the world is perfect. I'm in post-production now on a movie we shot in September. And it's just my favorite thing to do in life. But since I've been in New York 16 years and I've made 10 movies, it is just a beautiful thing. I feel so lucky that I'd be able to get movies made. And I make very low budget films, but that someone's willing to give me a little bit of money to make a film my way. I feel very lucky. It's easily my favorite thing to do. Also, just hanging out with people. We had a salon last night, just like people. It was about 40 or 50 people crammed into a really small space and performed these little 5-minute scenes, pretty much unrehearsed. Probably 10 scenes, various writers, and I wrote some of the scenes, and that you can find so many actors who are willing to just learn the dialogue, show up at a venue, have a few drinks, and perform in front of 50 or 40 or 50 of their peers and colleagues. Just magical and amazing. And that's the reason I came to New York, is to be around, people, like-minded people who are not trying to get rich, not trying to get famous. They just want to make art, And so, I don't know, just being around people and in a creative venue, it's my favorite thing to do. You know what I mean? I love also just walking the streets, walking to the IFC Center, walking to Metrograph, walking to Angelica Film Center, the Film Forum. I'm in an area which I'm way too old for this area. I'm in the Lower East Side. But you can walk to all these amazing, iconic independent film theaters in, 10, 20 minutes. And that's probably one of my favorite things to do. Probably just go and see two, three movies in a day or two movies in a row or just one movie, So that's definitely one of my favorite things to do.
Okay,
So.
before I let you go, because we're running out of time, where people can find your films?
Oh, well, I had Catfight, my movie Catfight, my most popular movie. It was on Netflix for 7 years. In other countries, in Canada, it might still be there. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in 2016. But I think
Well,
most
I
of them
was
are on,
there.
yeah. 2006, yeah. You ever go to the Toronto Film Festival? I
I did
assume
for
you.
years. I
Yeah.
stopped just after COVID, I stopped. I went for 30 years.
Oh man, we had a great experience there. And then, but I think it's on Tubi now. A lot of my movies are on Tubi. I think if you go to IMDb, look up One or Two Cal, you'll see a lot of my films, and you'll find a lot of them on Tubi, some on Amazon Prime. They're out there streaming. Some are not. Wooden Hearts is not available yet, and Pound Cake is not available yet. But there's a new company called Antenna Releasing that's going to put them both out later this year. But for now, if you go to IMDb and go to Tubi, I think you'll find a lot of my movies on Tubi, Amazon Prime. They're streaming, and I have a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays out there. And I take
Awesome.
my commentaries pretty seriously. So if you enjoy the movies, I think you'll enjoy the commentaries as well, because I try to get very specific about the process of making them. So,
Okay, thank you for your time and have a great day.
Simon, that was so much fun. Thanks, man. Have a good day.